It's that time of year again. The Ben HaMetzarim, the 3 weeks. It's a time of year that we dread. But we dread for all the wrong reasons. We dread because we dread fasting. We dread no music. We dread no meat. We dread no haircut. And we get such relief when Tisha B'Av, the day after Tisha B'Av comes. And finally, we can go back and resume the life we knew. We're relieved from the dread and the misery of those 3 weeks. But to focus on the externals and to focus on what we have to abstain and refrain from is to be missing the entire point, is to miss the entire boat. Person who, God forbid, has ever sat Shiva, and then they have to sit Shiva again. Imagine they complain, I can't believe I have to sit low to the ground, and I can't believe I can't wear leather shoes. And you say, that's what you dread? That's what you're focused on, having to sit Shiva again? Is the discomfort of sitting low to the ground? Of not wearing leather shoes? How about the fact that you lost a loved one? Someone irreplaceable? That your life is so impacted negatively that there's a void and a hole in your heart of someone who's no longer there? These Ben HaMetzarim, these 3 weeks, being back in this place is not about what we can't do, what we're deprived of, how uncomfortable, and how much it interferes with our summer plans or our vacation. It's about the recognition that there should be a hole in our heart, that something, and not only something, the thing, is missing. The Yerushalmi in Yuma famously says, Kol dor she'eino nivna b'yamav, any generation in which the Beis HaMikdash is not built, Malin alav ki'ilu hu hacharivo, it is as if we destroyed it. Moriv Rabbi Rav Asher Weiss always points out, people misquote this memra. People very often distort and misquote this saying of Chazal. Makes us feel better. They conclude, ki'ilu charav b'yamav, as if it was destroyed in your day. But that's not what Chazal said. They didn't say if it's not built, it's as if it was destroyed in our day. Like we're innocent. We have nothing to do with it. Someone else. But Chazal say, ki'ilu hu hacharivo. You and I, we destroyed it. If on Friday, if on Erev Shabbos, if on the eve of Ben HaMetzarim, the Beis HaMikdash, we're standing, Hashem would look down at our world. He would look at all of us. He would see the way we interact with one another. And He would choose to destroy the Beis HaMikdash today. We're not passive, innocent bystanders to its absence. We're not victims or martyrs of the fact that we don't have it. We are the cause. It is because of us. It is our behavior. That's why in Shemona Esrei we daven Bonei Yerushalayim in the present tense, because it's up to us to be rebuilding it, to be considering what it means that it's not here in our life. So many times over so many years we've spoken about all the pain in the world, all sources itself, and the Sila Kashchina, and the absence of the intense presence of the Ribono Shel Olam. We're missing something fundamental. We're missing something core to who we are and how we're meant to be living. We're missing that confidence that He's watching over us, and instead we live in a world of chaos and confusion, of doubt and of uncertainty. And this 3 week journey begins with that recognition that it's because of us. That we need to do better, we can do better, and we must do better. If we destroyed it, if we would destroy it today, then we also can rebuild it. It's in our hands and it's up to us. And the answer is to retrace our steps. Why would we cause it to be destroyed today? And what is the opposite of that behavior? How can we repair and atone on that behavior so that we can merit for it to be rebuilt? The Gemara, the famous Bavli in Yuma, tells us, first Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, 3 cardinal sins. The second one was destroyed. We all know, we hear it and repeat it every year. Because of sinas chinam, because of baseless hatred. What is baseless hatred? Hatred usually has a cause and a reason. People hate those who look different, act different, have a different lifestyle, vote differently, come to different conclusions. People hate not for no reason. They don't arbitrarily, out of nowhere, choose someone to hate. there's a cause, or they think there's a justifiable, legitimate cause. So what does it mean, sinas chinam? What is baseless about the hatred that has brought us to today? And it occurs to me, maybe because it's on my mind, particularly this year, that what's chinam, what's baseless, what's empty, what's hollow, and the hatred we have for one another, is a failure to judge others favorably. Is a failure to understand, to get all the facts, to learn the circumstances, to learn about the person and their background and who they are and what drives them, to understand their motive and their meaning and their personality and their purpose. That when we simply look superficially and come to conclusions and we write or we post or we speak about it at our Shabbos table, we produce and we generate a sinah which is chinam. It's baseless. It's empty. It's hollow. And if we'd only take the time, if we'd only make the effort, if we'd only come to the opposite conclusion and start with the other baseline or default, then we wouldn't have a sinah in the end at all. Judgment is built into the human psyche. The bottom line is we're programmed to judge. And that's not a bad thing. We judge our surroundings, we judge our health, we judge dangers and threats. From the moment we wake up until we fall asleep at night, we are using our judgment, hopefully with clarity, and hopefully in a good way, and hopefully coming to good conclusions, but we are designed and programmed to judge. So it's interesting that the Torah never says, don't judge. The Torah doesn't say, turn off judgment. If we would turn off judgment, we'd be in danger, we'd be at risk. Torah doesn't say stop judging. Torah instead says learn to judge favorably. Let your instinct and intuition be for the positive, for the good. Don't be drawn to a negative assumption or a negative conclusion. Judge by all means. It's understandable. It's natural. But develop and cultivate a habit, an intuition, an instinct to when you see someone or you see something, when you see a circumstance, when you see an organization or an institution, when you see something, develop that intuition to judge favorably. According to some, the obligation to judge favorably, it's not a midas chasidus. It's not just a nice thing that we do. It is a mitzvah aseh min haTorah, a fulfillment of b'tzedek tishpot amitecha, our responsibility to invoke justice, to be honest, to have integrity in the way that we look up and summarize circumstances. In fact, judging favorably, seeing things l'kaf zchus, is considered so important, so significant. The Gemara Shabbos, Kof Chav Zayin, lists it as one of the six behaviors that benefit us both in this world and in the world to come. That if we want a better life and better relationships, and we want to be more beloved by others, if we want to, in the world to come, have a better position and a better seat, if we want to be judged in a better way, then the habit to cultivate is unlike what is natural for so many, to see the negative and to be hypercritical and to assume the worst and to condemn and to criticize, but instead to take a step back and say, whoa, do we know everything? Is there more to the story? Do we know the protagonist? Do we know the people that we're drawing conclusions about? Are we leveling a criticism without even the courtesy to have a conversation? Do we go right to post online or to text our friends or to speak at the Shabbos table without even engaging the person to understand maybe there's more that we don't know? The reason to judge favorably is not only the recipient, the beneficiary, is not only because the person we may look at more innocently, we may exonerate them in our eyes when we take that time to really understand or to think, but it's really for ourselves. When Nasan HaNavi, Shmuel Beis, Perek Yud Beis, Nasan HaNavi comes to David HaMelech to give him tochacha, to give him musar, but he knows that if he addresses him head on, he'll be rebuffed, it's unlikely he'll be heard. And so Nasan HaNavi very creatively couches his musr in a mashal. He gives David HaMelech a parable. He says there were two men, one was very rich, one was wealthy, and the other indigent, the other was poor. The wealthy man had a flock full of cattle and sheep. The wealthy man had all the material possessions one could want. And Nebuch, the poor person, the poor man, all he had was one small sheep to his name. The rich man came and took the one, the lonely, the single sheep that the poor man had, the one little joy, the one little possession. The rich man came and took it from the poor man. And Nasan HaNavi turned to David HaMelech and he said, what should be done? What's just? What's righteous? What should be done? And David HaMelech incredulously said, what should be done? What should be done? The rich man is deserving death. How could it be? So greedy? So haughty? He took the one thing that the other person who had so little had should be put to death. Nasan HaNavi turned to him and he said, that story, that case, was merely a mashal, it was a parable. But David HaMelech, with all due respect, you are the rich man. And Uriah, he is the poor man. All he had was Bathsheba, and you took her from him. According to the Baal Shem Tov, by judging this rich man as deserving of death, David was himself sentenced to death. Because Hashem judges a person the way that we judge others. So when David HaMelech reacted and responded and didn't say, is there more to the story? Why did the rich man take the one sheep from the poor man? What was the circumstance? What's the background? What's the motivation? By rushing to judgment and judging unfavorably, David HaMelech essentially sealed his own fate. So says the Baal Shem Tov, when Hashem is determining the proper judgment for a person, what Hashem does is He shows someone else who does the same mistake, who violates the same avera, the same chait, as that person. And when we see that individual who essentially does the same thing as us, so when we judge them favorably, when we say, cut him some slack, give him the benefit of the doubt, I'm sure there's more to the story, then Hashem does that for us. But when we sling arrows, and we see that person and think the worst, and assume the worst, and come to the worst conclusion, when we judge the other unfavorably, it's exactly what the Ribbono Shel Olam do with us. And that's why the Chachamim teach us to be so vigilant, so careful, so mindful in how we look at and the conclusions we reach and how we judge others. Because through our judgment, we are essentially sealing our fate. It's amazing. Chazal say, kol aposel b'mum aposel. We all have this tendency. We love to find in other people the wrong that we ourselves struggle with. I don't know what the psychology is behind it. Maybe it makes us feel better. It makes us feel less guilty or less shame. Maybe it in fact even makes us feel superior or better. But when we come late to shul or we're imperfect with our record of coming on time, we see our friend who comes in a little late and we say, how could they? Don't they care about davening? We see someone talk. We see someone lack kavana. We see someone missed out on a shir. We see someone who doesn't show up to volunteer to do chesed. We don't see someone's name listed among those who are givers. We rush to judgment. Whatever you are so drawn to judge so quickly is likely just a mirror of what we need to work on ourselves. So Baal Shem Tov says, when we judge, we're essentially judging ourselves through the other. What we see in the other is really what we need to work on. And if we learn to judge favorably, we're kind and generous and we give the benefit of the doubt, we cut slack, and we give explanations and understandings, then the Ribbono Shel Olam does that for us. And when we don't, when as too many do, we sit in judgment and we draw our conclusions about the other person, the other people, the other family, the other institution, those leaders, and a Kadosh Baruch Hu judges us in that way. Baal Shem Tov says that's a pshat in the pasuk in Tehillim, Kuf Chaf Aleph, familiar, we often invoke him, we're davening for those in crisis. We describe Hashem Tzilcha al Yad Yeminecha. A Kadosh Baruch Hu, the Almighty, is our shadow, and says the Baal Shem, just as a shadow entirely mimics, it follows exactly the person, the shadow is exactly what we do, so to kiviyachol the Ribbono Shel Hashem Tzilcha, He is our shadow. If we judge favorably, He judges us favorably. If we're strict and exacting and we see the worst, if we're hypocritical and duplicitous, if we're drawn to judge hypercritically, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu looks at our file and says, who do you think you are? Are you kidding me? You speak as much Lashon Hara. You're just as stingy. You're just as greedy. You're just as late to shul. You just have as many challenges in following. But if we look away, and if we explain away, and if we excuse, and if we give the benefit of the doubt, and if we seek to understand, then Hashem will be that way with us as well. That's why the Gemara in Shabbos, that same Gemara, Kuchav Zayin, understands, Tana Rabban Hadan Chaveru Lekav Zchus, Donin Oso Lizchus, that a person who judged their friend favorably, they are judged favorably. But why? Maybe in fact they're innocent, but maybe I'm guilty. Why should their judgment impact me? And the answer is the glasses, the prism, the perspective with which we bring the world is mirrored back on us. The Gemara tells three stories there. We don't have time to elaborate. Three examples, three stories, exceptional stories of people who went above and beyond to judge favorably. They didn't have to. It wasn't the obvious conclusion to come to. But in these three circumstances, the three stories the Gemara tells, these individuals chose, as if a game, as if a riddle, as if a mystery, to say, how could we creatively explain this in a way that would shine favorably? And in all three cases, the person who was the subject of judgment turns and says, your creativity, how you explained it away, is exactly what happened. Thank you for judging me favorably. You were right. Your most creative idea in order to explain why it happened the way it did, you were right. The Gemara concludes with a beautiful tefillah. In all three circumstances, the individual turned to the one who was judging favorably and said, V'ata kishem shadantani lizchus, Hamakom yadin oscha lizchus. And you, the same way you judged me favorably, the same way, thank you, you made a phone call, you asked, you read somewhere something about me, you heard something about me, but instead of coming to a conclusion, you gave the benefit of the doubt. You came to me, you asked, you were open to understanding. The same way HaKadosh Baruch Hu should judge you favorably as well. Simple understanding of the Gemara, it's a bracha. It's a bracha, it's a tefillah. You judged me favorably, you should be judged favorably. Mida keneged mida, what a beautiful thing. But that's not what it means based on the Baal Shem Tov. Based on the Baal Shem, it's not a tefillah or a bracha. It is a statement, it is a fact. Oh, you judged me favorably. Now, the Ribbono Shel Olam will keep his end of the bargain. He will judge you favorably as well. He will see you the same way. And so, conditioning ourselves to not jump to conclusions, to not see the worst, to not be hypercritical, to not label or name or marginalize or dismiss, but to take the time to understand if we really are going to draw a conclusion. I'll tell you a little secret, you don't have to draw a conclusion. You don't have to have an opinion about everything. Not everything is our business. In this area, we don't have to be so well read. I have to know everything that happened, every detail. I have to read every article and every report. I need to know. Not everything is a mitzvah to know every single detail. Of other things, if it doesn't affect us, if it affects us, of course, we can and we should. There's not always a mitzvah to draw a conclusion, but if we're going to, we should condition ourselves that our default, our instinct, is to judge favorably, give the benefit of the doubt, assume the best in someone. Assume the best. It's an amazing thing. We come late to shul, there's always a good reason. None of us have ever said, you know, this was just not justifiable. I'm just a no good. What can I tell you? I'm a failure. I came late to shul. There's always a reason. We were helping. Somebody in the parking lot decided they had to back into the space and almost killed three people. There was a backup on Montoya Circle. There were whatever we ate the night before the fast because we thought somehow it would make the fast easier. We paid for it all day and came late to min. Whenever we always find the excuse. We always find the rationalization when it comes to ourselves. But you know the word rationalize, where it comes from. The etymology, rationalize are rational lies. They are rational lies that we tell ourselves. When it comes to ourselves, we're the most creative people on the planet. But when it comes to other people, when it comes to other people, we don't spend one moment to assume maybe they also ate the same thing I had last night. Maybe they also got stuck in the same traffic on Montoya Circle I got stuck in. Maybe they also had something happening at home that delayed them and made them late. Instead, we say, they're always late. They don't care about davening. They don't care about shul. They don't care about minyan. They're not serious. They're not a yirei shemayim. This phenomenon has a name. 50 years ago, psychologists Ned Jones and Victor Harris coined the phrase fundamental attribution error or correspondence bias. And they basically found through countless research I won't share with you that when it comes to other people and the mistakes they make, the failures they have, we place undue emphasis on internal characteristics. That's just a reflection of who they are. They're always late. They're not punctual. They don't care about people's time. They're not a real yirei shemayim. We always ascribe their mistake or failure to something internal. But when it comes to ourselves, we give ourselves the benefit of the doubt. It's external factors. It's called the fundamental attribution bias. So when someone runs a red light or speeds past us, we say that person's a maniac. They're reckless. They're crazy. Instead of saying, maybe they're driving someone to the hospital. Maybe there's an emergency. You see someone kick a vending machine, you assume they have an anger problem. When you kick the machine, it's because your snack got stuck. When they kick, it's because they've got an anger problem. Someone's impatient in line in the drugstore. They're nasty. You heard the way they spoke to people? They're nasty. When you're impatient, you've got a child at home with 104 fever. It's understandable. Someone else's cell phone goes off during shul. The gall, the chutzpah, they don't value davening. Your cell phone goes off. I'm a conscientious person. I have to be responsive. There could be an emergency. You know who I am? We tend to, when it comes to others, it's an internal flaw. When it comes to ourselves, there's an external factor. There's always an excuse. There's always an excuse. We have no problem judging ourselves favorably and excusing our shortcomings and explaining our mistakes. But we're not willing to cut the same slack to other people. We're not willing to give them space. We look for the worst. And that leaves us easily insulted and easily angered. I've had it myself where someone says, Rabbi, you walked right by me in Publix. This was years ago. And you didn't say hello, and I know that was on purpose. I say, if I knew the way you were talking to me now, it would have been on purpose then. But I didn't know. It wasn't on purpose. I said to the person, do you know my child's at home with a high temperature and sick, and I ran to the pharmacy before it closes to get a medicine, and I'm so worried on my mind, and I didn't see you. Of course, if I saw you, I'd stop and greet you and say hello. Of course I would. When someone doesn't answer our text or our email or our phone call, we assume the worst. They're a bad friend, and they're a rude and a nasty person, and they're irresponsible, and they don't have it together. When we don't get back to someone, you can't imagine my phone, my WhatsApp, how many messages I get. I'm so sorry. I was away and I wasn't checking because I need a break and downtime and vacation. Sometimes you just have to disconnect. We're the most creative and the most favorable and the most kind and the most generous when it comes to ourselves. And sadly, too often we take the opposite when it comes to others. And perhaps that's the sinna that Chazal were talking about. That is chinam. It's chinam. It's baseless. It's not necessary. It's inaccurate. It's not true. It's a sinna which is chinam. When we come to unfair and unfavorable conclusions, when we don't bother to understand, when we are unfair and unkind, it is chinam. Mishnah Nava says, Al tadin es chavercha shetagil imkomo. Don't judge someone till you get to their place. And the Bar Tanura says about it, you know what that means? Don't ever judge anyone. Why? Because you can never walk in another man's shoes. You can never be in another person's place. Bar Tanura writes, Al tadin es chavercha shetagil imkomo, ad shetagil idei nisayon kamoso v'tinatzel. Until you're in their shoes, you know their nisyonos. You're married to their wife, you have their children, you have their medical conditioning, you get the same lab report, you have the same personality, the same mental health assessment. Everything about you is the exact same as that person. You know their pekel, you know their baggage, you know their nisayon, that you could sit in judgment. You know that you would react or respond differently. You know that you would have prevented something differently. Al tadin es chavercha, ad shetagia lemakomo. You can never be in anyone else's place. Don't ever judge anyone. Don't ever judge anyone unfavorably. Don't ever fail to give the benefit of the doubt. One of my favorite quotes is from a 19th century Scottish author, Ian McLaren. I was not happened to be reading, but I saw the quote. Be kind, for everyone you meet is fighting a battle you know nothing about. And that is the message of these 3 weeks. Just be kind. Just be nice. Be nice in front of the other people, and be nice behind the other people's back. Be nice because everyone is fighting a battle you know nothing about. I happen to be the Rav of the shul of this community. I know a lot more than others, and I know nothing about the battles people are fighting. And the little I know, I can promise you, don't judge them. You'd give everything you have to not be tested with what they're being tested with. So just be nice. Just be nice these 3 weeks. We want the Beis HaMikdash rebuilt. It's not rocket science. Shasathons and all kinds of other, they're beautiful, they're wonderful. We participate, we host them, they're great. This one's easy. This is your homework for 3 weeks. It's fairly easy. Be nice. Judge favorably. Don't judge at all, or take a moment to be creative and to try to come up with the most creative explanation that would enable and allow you to judge favorably, to see the good, because that's what it means to be a good friend. Yeshua ben Prachi, Aseh lecha rabu, k'nei lecha chaver, v'vidonis kol adam lekav schus. What is the Mishnah? How does it all tie in? Because what makes you a k'nei lecha chaver? What makes you a friend? The Menachem Tzion, Reb Menachem ben Tzion Zaks, points out, the reason this is all in one Mishnah, is what makes you a good friend is your capacity to be done as ha'adam lekav schus. So they didn't return your call. So maybe you didn't even get invited back. So you didn't get invited back for a Shabbos meal. Be down the kaf schus. We made a simcha recently, Baruch Hashem. And as we've always consistently done, we invited the whole shul. And several people stopped me, and they were very hesitant and reluctant, and they were felt very guilty, and they apologized, and they explained exactly why they couldn't be there. And I told them, and I reacted with a full heart. I said, of course we know you're doing the best you can. Anyone who could be there, we're grateful. If you can't, I know you're doing the best you can. Here's the thing. Would you do me a favor? Please try to remember that Yocheved and I are also always doing the best we can. I know you're doing the best you can. You can make it, you can't make it, you recognize it, you don't recognize. Remember, all of us, we're all doing the best we can. And we ever fail to show up for one another, it's not because we're unloyal or don't like or don't cherish or don't value. Have you done us kol adam lekav schus? It's because we're all doing the best that we can. You'll note, says Rav Menachem ben Tzion Zaks, it doesn't say as ha'adam, the person. What makes you a good friend when you're capable of judging as kol ha'adam? When you narrow in, when you zoom in the lens on the one circumstance, the one text message, the one invitation that wasn't reciprocated, the one nasty comment, the one time they walked by you in shul and didn't say good Shabbos, if you make that the sum total of your relationship, if that becomes everything, then of course you won't judge favorably. But if you zoom out the lens and you're done as kol ha'adam, you look at the whole person and you say, you know, I have 20-year relationship of loyalty and kindness and love. I'm going to write off that comment. I'm going to write off that failed return to my text message because I'm looking at kol ha'adam. And when you look at the total person, you know what happens? Then lekaf schus. Then you're able to see favorably. Lubavitcher Rebbe Zatzal once told the man who came to see him, he said, it's better to lose an argument and win a friendship than win an argument and lose the friendship. You have to decide what matters more, what's more important, our relationships and our rebuilding the Beis HaMikdash one block at a time or not, or not. We have to pivot from hyper-criticism to hyper-compliments. People desperately need to feel good and feel good about themselves, to know that they're valued and they're valuable, to know that they matter. Do you know the meaning you put in someone's life when you give a compliment for no reason at all? When you say something kind, you've built the entire person up, you've restored their life, you've given them everything. And the choice is ours. We can look at the world through a negative lens and hypercriticism and judgment and complaints, or we can look at it positively and we can see the good. We can destroy the Beis HaMikdash, or we could be the reason it is rebuilt. The choice is entirely up to us. I'll end with the story. of a young successful couple who found their dream home. And shortly after they purchased it, the couple sat at their kitchen table. And they sat down, everyone buys their new home to sit in the kitchen nook, a cup of coffee, a breakfast. Oh, geschmack. The wife looked out the window, and to her surprise, she saw the neighbor had a clothing line. She couldn't believe it. They're hanging dirty laundry on the clothing line. The laundry's not clean, she told her husband. The laundry's dirty. Who hangs dirty laundry on the cleaning line? So she sat there and said to her husband about her new neighbor whom she never met. Someone really needs to teach her the difference between clean and dirty, how to do laundry. A couple days later, the couple sat down at the table for another meal. And now the wife looked through the same window and saw the clothing hanging on the line was clean. She said, wow, I guess someone taught her. She learned how to do the laundry. She learned the difference between dirty and clean. Someone must have taught her how to wash the clothes. Without raising his head from his plate, the husband responded. He said, actually, honey, I just got up early this morning and I washed the window. And so it is with life. We sit and we judge other people's laundry. We determine it's dirty. And we put all kinds of labels and judgment on it. And the truth is, the only thing that's cloudy is our vision. We see the negative and we see that which is worthy of criticism when we wear glasses and a perspective which is kulo negative. But if we can learn, not a sinas chinam, but an avas chinam, if we can condition ourselves to react and respond, to instinctively give the benefit of the doubt, to be as creative in explaining and rationalizing for others as we do for ourselves, then Amir Tzashem, 3 weeks from today, we will not be sitting on the floor, but we'll be enjoying the rebuilding of the Beis HaMikdash in Yerushalayim. B'mehirah v'yameinu.